the biggest story in Vancouver continues to be Elias Pettersson and what he is doing. At this point, can we overrate this kid considering how good he's been so soon?
I there's always the danger of that, but I feel like, you know, in watching Pettersson, you always think, well, you know, some level of this, it's probably not sustainable. You know, his shooting percentage is sky high. But then you actually watch him play and you're like, you kind of catch yourself believing that it is. You know what I mean?
He's right.
So skilled that it's just, he's this part of this crop of new NHL players that they're bringing a level of skill that we haven't seen it before, but maybe we haven't seen it happen at this pace of play. Is that fair?
No, I think that's absolutely fair. And when you look at a player like that, and when, let's just say that he is a type of transcendent talent that can elevate the team and elevate players around him, because one thing that gets said a lot, and I know the analytics, they say one thing, but there's also the other side where players, when we meet them after games and I get a chance to talk to them, they feel the magic he has and they want to emulate him and not be the player he is, but be a good two-way player. They don't want to be left behind because they see Pettersson doing all these great things. So when you have a talent like him, could that catapult this team into the playoff conversation if you have a difference-making player to that degree, or is that asking a lot?
I think that's a really interesting question, because I think there's kind of a thing with Pittsburgh, right, where people talk about like the Crosby factor, or we can even put Evgeny Malkin in that conversation as well, where you've got, you know, a laundry list of players who wouldn't be special on most teams, but, you know, they get to work with Sidney Crosby every day in practice. They get to work with Evgeny Malkin every day in practice, and their own skills become better. They become better instinctual players around these guys. And maybe it doesn't last when they go to another team and, you know, they kind of lose that everyday push of, you know, you have to be in line with these guys in order to play here. But I think there is something to be said for these transcendent level skill players who are not just reliant on the skill, but also, like you said, with Pettersson, play a two-way game that you feel compelled to try to put yourself on their level, even if you can't match their talent. And, you know, whether or not the Canucks can make the playoffs this year, I think it's certainly something that could happen given how weak the Pacific looks so far. But I wouldn't count on it, just because I think they're probably another year away from really filling out that roster and looking like a really good team again. But, you know, don't write them off. We saw what Vegas did last year. I don't want to necessarily say that Vegas was bad or that what they were doing wasn't real, because it was. But they weren't as good as, you know, making the Stanley Cup Finals, right? So, like, a team that might not be ready to be at their peak can still become better than everyone expects them to for one season. And the Vancouver Canucks could definitely be that team.
I mean, even a good team can harness lightning in a bottle like the Golden Knights did last year. But I think with Pettersson, I think we can all readily admit that he is better than we all anticipated entering this year. And it's a short sample size here, Andrew, but 9 games in, when we have names like Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin all thrown into the conversation with a guy like EP, can you willingly say, and you know what, maybe Crosby is the one exception, but EP being a 19-year-old player about to be 20, that his defensive game is actually better than that of maybe Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews and some of the younger stars of the game today?
I'm not sure about Connor McDavid, because I think he kind of gets the short end of the stick because he has to float so many below-average players in Edmonton.
Sure. But
he's definitely in that category. He's a very impressive player, and it's one of those things where, you know, star players in Sweden, they rarely hit the NHL and are one-dimensional players, right? Like, even guys who became much better with age, like Henrik Zetterberg, when he broke in with Detroit, he was, you know, right there with Rick Nash for the Calder Trophy, but he wasn't, you know, blowing the doors off like Pettersson is, but he was a great defensive player right away. Mm-hmm. A lot of those players were the Sedins, great defensive players right away. It took them a couple of years to hit their peak offensively, but they were always responsible players. And maybe it's something in, you know, youth hockey in Sweden that emphasizes that it's not just about the one zone. It's a three-zone game, and Pettersson is definitely ahead of the curve there.
Yeah, I mean, even Henrik Sedin was on this station over the weekend talking about, again, his experience playing in Sweden against fully grown men and how that probably did help him in such a way. And when people are reluctant to call Pettersson a generational talent, you also have to look at last season, too, and the fact that what he did in Sweden as an 18-year-old had never been done before in the history of the Swedish Hockey League. And if you compare that as a professional hockey league, just not the NHL, I think we can come to a reasonable conclusion that Elias Pettersson is not just the best player in the Canucks, but he is absolutely one of the best young players on the planet. And I really don't think you can overstate that.
Well, yeah, I feel like if you were to make it, say that the Olympics were happening this February.
Sure.
If you were to make a Team Sweden, what line is Pettersson on?
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Is it lower than second?
I'd have a hard time saying, yeah, like I want him on the first line, but of course we're in Vancouver.
Yes, of course. So like even with that bias, though, if we try to remove that, I feel like you're not going to get through too many players until you name him to the roster, right? Mm-hmm. Like the last Olympics where they named, I think it was like the first 13 players. I think Pedersen's the most first 13 players for Sweden.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know what I find really interesting as well, and looking at the analytics about quality of teammates being important, because oftentimes we always talk about, hey, you need to spread out scoring. Don't put your best players on the same line. You need to have three or four lines going because you want to make sure you spread out the quality of competition, all that sort of stuff. But looking at the analytics most recently, I think the quality of teammates tells us that nothing makes a bigger impact on your player's success than being playing alongside other good players, essentially. And we're seeing some teams load up their top lines. And when we see Pettersson and Besser together, and they're able to take a step and do what they did against the Colorado Avalanche, is the best move to have your two best players essentially on the same line, or should you be looking to spread that out?
Well, I think, especially in the situation Vancouver is in, I don't see the point in splitting them up, because I think those are two players that if they're looking down the line, you know, Travis Green's looking 2-3 years down the line, those two should be a duo that can frighten every team in the NHL, right? So if you keep them together and keep that chemistry developing, because, you know, it's already good, it's only going to get better, you know, as both players age a little bit, become a bit more physically mature. That's a dangerous thing to have. And then you worry about filling out the rest of your lineup with other good prospects that you have. You know, you've still got a couple drafts that you can fill up before, you know, Vancouver considers themselves maybe in cup contention. Say best case scenario, 2 to 3 years from now, they're in that conversation. You've got time to fill out the rest of that roster. And I think with the way that Pettersson has debuted, and after Besser last year, and, you know, Besser looks healthy again, and having him with Pettersson, how hard is it going to be to convince somebody, oh, just, you know, come to Vancouver for a little bit less money. We don't really have much of a winter. We're right on the ocean. Mm-hmm. And we get to play with Pettersson and Besser. Is it going to be that tough to attract a couple good UFAs?
No question. And that's really interesting, because just a few months ago, when the Canucks went out and signed Jay Beagle, Antoine Roussel, and Tim Schaller, I mean, they paid more than people expected because Vancouver's not very good, and they're in a situation where they have to overpay to get free agents. Now, all of a sudden, you have a player that players would want to come and play with, and that changes everything. Now, to the point you made a bit earlier about how good players, the great ones, are always performing above league average. So if you look at sustainability versus not being sustainable, when you look at a player like him now, 40% shooting, that's going to come down, we think. I don't think he's going to keep shooting at a 40% pace, but, you know, PDO and all that sort of stuff, if you look at it, the best players are typically always, almost always performing at above expected values, right? So even though it seems lucky, it's not as lucky as it may seem for the great players.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Pettersson won't shoot 40%, because I don't believe anybody's really shot over 30% who actually produces shots since like the 1980s. And the two highest shooting percentage rookie seasons of all time are both guys who played with Mario Lemieux. So I feel like that's probably not within within his purview, but maybe his shooting percentage is half that. 20% still pretty darn good, you know, like, and like you said about great players juicing the numbers a little bit. I know that Crosby throughout his prime, you know, the average on ice shooting percentage at 5-on-5 was like 7.5 or 8%, and he was in around like 12% every year. So like, good players do influence those percentages, and you definitely have to adjust your expectations of what is lucky or unlucky based on that. And I think we will see Pettersson come down a little, but not to average NHL numbers, because he's just too talented. He creates a shot quality imbalance by just being there.
He's a cheat code. He's a cheat code in
exactly.
The NHL.
He's like in the old NHL games where you would pick like Cliff Ronning, and he was faster than everybody else.
Streak in down the wing and then go backhand forehand, and it's an automatic goal, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know what? Those were the best versions of the NHL video games, in my opinion. He is Andrew Berkshire, analyst for Sportsnet here on The Playbook, Sat and John. And, you know, if we come to the conclusion that Pettersson is better than we all expected, and he just continues to kick down the doors of what we think is the roof for him, I guess he's kicking down the ceiling, then this team should theoretically be better than what we expect. And is it possible that now we have to change the conversation about the Canucks, where in the preseason and in the summer, we said there's no way they're going to be a playoff team. They're still turning the corner of this rebuild. But if he's that far ahead of where we thought he was, can he be the reason why this team might challenge for a wild card spot this year? Or is it asking too much to?
It's probably asking too much, but at the same time, I don't think it's necessarily unrealistic either, especially, you know, if you get good goaltending, anything can happen in this league. And I think the Canucks have some underrated players on there. Like, I really like Ben Hutton. I really like Troy Stetcher. Mm-hmm. I think they've got some good young pieces on D that people don't really – they aren't like household names, say, but I think there's some good pieces there that, you know, maybe they – don't fulfill the hope that they're building right now for this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do, and if they make it next year with far less difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we let you go, we do also have to ask you about what's going on with the LA Kings. Now, they did fire head coach John Stevens, and they have hired Willie Desjardins. Now, the question is, can Willie make any sort of difference for the Kings? Can they improve as a team, or are they essentially cooked at this point?
I don't know why John Stevens fell on the sword for the Kings, because I think it's fairly clear that that team is just too old and too slow, right? Like, I thought that they maybe would be a little bit better this year, and then things would kind of go wrong for them a couple seasons from now. But you look at the core that they have locked up, and I think Doughty is the only one who's currently not 30 or older. And that's just not how you win in today's game. You know, Kopitar and Doughty are still elite players, but they can't be the only guys. And I feel like Jeff Carter's health has been an issue for a while. I know he has problems with his foot. You know, Ilya Kovalchuk, he's okay. He's not what he was in his prime. He's actually generating fewer scoring chances than an average NHL forward right now. Maybe he'll get a little bit better as the season wears on. But, you know, for a guy who's, I think, 35, odds are you're not going to get better as the season goes on. It's just not how it works.
Yeah.
So I think they're just kind of cooked with that core, and they lined it up and signed them all for a long time. So I don't see anything dramatically changing. Maybe they'll hit their stride a little bit once John Lee Quick's healthy and maybe push for a playoff spot. But they're one of those teams that are in that awkward position where all they are is a competitor for a playoff spot at best, and they're just going to get knocked out right away.
No, I'm with you on that. It's one thing to look at a young team and be like, hey, they can improve as the season goes along. I think we know what the Kings are at this point. That's asking a lot. Now, before we let you go, what other team do you think might be very close to making a coaching change here in the NHL?
Ooh, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of panic in San Jose. I think they're probably a team that pays a little bit of attention to the numbers, but they've been really suffering from bad luck early in this season, especially the Carlson-Vlasic pairing, which has just been like record-setting bad PDO numbers. But I wouldn't be surprised if they shake it up. I thought for sure that Todd McClellan was going to be in trouble in Edmonton, but they really pulled it together. Those are the two that really stuck out to me looking over the NHL so far. You know, I think that a lot of people who, or a lot of teams that were expected to be bad have been kind of better than expected this year. You look at Vancouver, you look at Montreal, the coaches kind of found a way to not necessarily get blood from a stone, but get the best out of their lineups early this season. So it might be more around trade deadline that we're talking about coach firings.
Yeah, and then we'll see. Andrew Berkshire, it's always a pleasure getting you on the show. I look forward to talking to you again next week. It's always fun taking a little bit of a deeper, more analytical look at what's happening around the National Hockey League. So it's always fun getting you on the show, buddy.
Absolutely, guys. It's my pleasure.
Sportsnet 650.